Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, April 1st, 2014, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Lavendar has released a lot of information from her journals, covering close to 30 years of ET assignments, direct contact, and light information from the Pleiadians that she had been directed to hold until Giant Rock cracked, which it did. That was the signal. Our featured show, Crack Between the Worlds, lays the foundation of what was to come in her life, but with almost 200 shows and nearly 400,000 listens, we're sure that we have newer listeners who missed the early years of Starseed Radio Academy. Tonight, we're again presenting from Lavendar's vault what she calls the Atlantis material. This information was transmitted to her over several weeks for 5 hours each day near the end of 1980. With so many Atlantean souls alive again in today's world, the lessons they bring are to help us avoid repeating history concerning the misuse of power. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing topics of interest to Starseed and sharing some emails from our listeners. We'd like to thank Vanya and Claudia for hosting the switchboard this evening, and you're welcome to call in with comments or questions. The number to dial is 917-889-8292. And remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. And when you visit our show page, please remember to click follow. StarseedHotline.com also has an online community at StarseedHotline.ning.com. And we thank Tammy for her help and dedication to the forum. Our toll-free number is 888-881-0881, and the Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings in your natal astrological chart, and the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. Remote healing sessions for people and pets are also available with Tammy. And if you have a birthday coming up, you can find out how to make the most of your 10 hours of power by requesting your solar return timing. And now I would like to first introduce Anastasia. Hello, Anastasia.
Good evening, everybody. Hi, Arielle.
How are you doing?
Fine. You can hear me okay? Great.
Yes.
You're talking to me, so I guess it's working.
Yeah.
I never know about that button, whether it's going to work or not. It's great to be with everybody tonight.
And we're glad to have you with us with the Starseed News.
Yeah.
So what's
you want to start out with the news right away?
Oh, yeah, yeah. What's happening in the world?
Well, gosh, lots. But, you know, before I get started, I have to praise some of our Starseed listeners because they have been wonderful. We have a bunch of contributing reporters to this program now. So I want to be sure to thank Jada and Barbara and Emily and Giovanna and Lori. You all have been wonderful with sending me articles for the show, and I appreciate that. And some of those are going to be in tonight's program. So you guys are doing great. I mean, we keep this up, we might be able to start a Starseed newscast formally. Who knows? But, yeah, it's just great. Of course, that's just a call for me to improve my technique and, you know, to get a little bit better at what I do. But you all are just wonderful, and I want to thank you so much. Well, we're going to start out, as we always do, by talking about the sun. And the first of three or more coronal mass ejections were en route to the Earth today. They were expected to arrive late in the day. And, you know, I never know if that means after sunset or what, but according to spaceweather.com, they just say that these CMEs will arrive late today on April 1st, which happens to be April Fool's Day, everybody. But they say that none of the incoming clouds is squarely Earth-directed at the moment. Now, they say a series of glancing blows, however, will rattle Earth's magnetic field and possibly spark auroras. The NOAA forecasters estimate a 60% chance of polar geomagnetic storms tomorrow, April 2nd. There's a sunspot of interest that everybody needs to know about, and they are all watching it in the astronomy world. They say that growing near the center of the solar disk, sunspot AR 2021 has nearly doubled in size in the past 24 hours. Now, this sunspot has a beta-gamma magnetic field that harbors energy for M-class solar flares, but they say rapid development could destabilize that field and make eruptions more likely. And they say that any eruptions from this sunspot in the next day or so will likely be Earth-directed. And as April begins, this is kind of interesting, Earth and Mars are converging at 5 kilometers a second for a close approach that happens 2 weeks from now. The closest approach of Earth to Mars occurs on April 14th at a distance of only 92 million kilometers. So they're saying mark your calendar and get ready to see Mars at its best. Now, experts are telling us that I don't think an average backyard telescope is going to get the best view of Mars, but certainly you should be able to see it. So it's the closest that it's been and for some time. So that's going to be really beautiful. If you have the type of optic equipment to see that, I envy you. It would be great. And on Saturday, March 29th, the magnetic canopy of sunspot AR 2017 did erupt and produced a brief but intense X1 class solar flare. Now, this was intense, and there was a lot that happened from that. X1 is not the biggest, of course. It's the smallest of the X-class flares. But they said a flash of extreme UV radiation sent waves of ionization rippling through Earth's upper atmosphere and disturbed the normal propagation of terrestrial radio transmissions. Now, this happens sometimes, but they say that this was sort of unusual. It caused some radio people to comment on this website. They say that the flare not only blacked out radio signals, deuced some radio signals of its own. Now, the explosion above sunspot AR 2017 sent shockwaves racing through the sun's atmosphere at speeds as high as 11 million miles per hour. Radio emissions stimulated by those shocks crossed the 93 million mile divide to Earth, causing shortwave radio receivers to roar with static. And they say that the ionizing action of the flare led to a rare magnetic crochet, which I've reported on this program before, that measured 17, NT? Can somebody tell me what that means? At the magnometer in Boulder, Colorado. I really should have researched that before this.
Well,
some of you out there are going to be chuckling because you know what that means, and I don't. But they say that a magnetic crochet is a ripple in the Earth's magnetic field that's caused by electrical currents that flow in the air 60 kilometers to maybe 100 kilometers way over us. And unlike geomagnetic disturbances that arrive with CMEs days after a flare, a magnetic crochet occurs while the flare is in process. They tend to occur during fast, impulsive flares like the one we just had. And they say that while the magnetic field of that sunspot AR 2017 is now decaying, they say it still poses a threat for eruptions. So I think what they're saying is that the sun is full of surprises, and they're watching it, and we don't know what's going to happen next. So, anywho, on Friday, there was a 5.1 quake in Los Angeles. Any of the starseed out there feel that? They say that this quake was concerning because it's renewing the seismologist's concerns of a catastrophic quake on the dangerous Puente Hills fault. They say that it was just a 10-second reminder of a fault that seismologists don't talk about very much, but they believe that it's possibly more dangerous than some of the other California faults. They say the Puente Hills thrust fault is so dangerous precisely because of its location. It runs from the suburbs of northern Orange County through the San Gabriel Valley and under the skyscrapers of downtown L.A. before it terminates in Hollywood. Now, experts say a major 7.5 earthquake on that fault could do more damage than the big one, what they call the big one on the San Andreas Fault. They say the size of Friday's quake was considered moderate, but it really packed a punch. There were photographs on the Internet of damages in stores and buildings and such. They say that residents within 10 miles of the epicenter in La Habra reported toppled furniture, broken glass, and fallen picture frames. Several water mains did break, and a rock side in Carbon Canyon caused a car to overturn. And so they say that, you know, more than a dozen homes even were red-tagged because of possible structural damage. And in Quad City, Illinois, there have been thousands of dead fish that have been surfacing off the Hennepin Canal. They say it was in Milan, Illinois. But this happened just a couple of days ago on Sunday, March 30th. Now, people are kind of astonished because the Department of Natural Resources in Illinois says it's normal. The officials say that this happens every winter with cold weather, but the residents of that town say they've never seen anything like it before. People have said, we're just walking along the shoreline and we just see all of these dead fish. I don't know why they're dead, people are saying. So even though officials are saying it's normal, people that live there say they don't know what could have happened. They've never seen anything like it before. And in Russia, now I just tried to calculate this in my mind, but in Moscow, they have 10,000 snowplows that are trying to remove the heavy snowfall that was brought to the Moscow region by a cyclone that's covered the Russian capital with more than 10 centimeters of snow overnight up until maybe today. A wave cyclone formed slightly to the north of a river or a city, a Volga River city named Tiber, that's just a short ways away from Moscow. Now, they say that's what triggered the snowfall. And they say that while the snowfall is getting weaker and will come to a close after all, this is Tuesday, but they say that there are 10,000 plows working on the roads. That's a lot of snow.
Yeah.
Plows. Now, you know, to us, I don't think, what did I just say, how many centimeters? That's not really a whole heck of a lot of snow. But, you know, when you get into a place like Moscow or New York City or any place else, it's a different matter. So if you're from Alaska, that doesn't sound like much, but I think for Moscow, that's probably quite a bit. And so that's what's been going on in that part of the world. And there's been a new discovery. A lot of these articles, by the way, are from our Starseed reporters. This is one of them. But from Rio de Janeiro, we learned that a Brazilian astronomer at the National Observatory of Brazil in Rio de Janeiro has announced that there may be an undiscovered rogue planet lurking in the shadow of Neptune. And Planet Nibiru watchers say the planet is Nibiru. Now, according to this astronomer, who presented his findings on Tuesday at a meeting of the American Astronomical Society in Oregon, his calculations show that about half a dozen Kuiper Belt objects are in strange orbits. That is, they are orbiting not where they're supposed to be. And he said that the strange orbits have only a few possible explanations. And this is from National Geographic, I think, ultimately, because this is where they quote him from National Geographic. This astronomer said, I think the easiest explanation is a planetary mass solar companion. A planetary mass solar companion. And National Geographic explains that this is a planet that orbits very far out from the sun, but that's massive enough to be having gravitational effects on the Kuiper Belt objects. Very interesting. Yeah. And there's been a 3,300-year-old tomb discovered in Egypt, a brand-new tomb. They say that it was discovered recently at the cemetery at Abydos in Egypt. And they say that it is, let's see here, it has a rectangular entrance shaft with massive walls as a base. They say it's a small pyramid that was estimated at about 23 feet high. So they are saying that these smaller pyramids were less important people, but nevertheless, they were people of wealth. They said that in this pyramid, they found a finely crafted sandstone sarcophagus that was painted red. There was a photo of it on the internet. It was really interesting. They say it was created for a scribe I won't repeat that name, I can't. But they said that the sarcophagus has images of several Egyptian gods on it and hieroglyphic inscriptions that record spells from the Book of the Dead that, of course, as we know, helped the Egyptians enter the afterlife. There was no mummy in the sarcophagus, and the tomb was ransacked, they say, at least twice in antiquity. I don't know how they would know that, but that's what they say. Now, there were human remains in this tomb that survived the ransacking, and archaeologists found, they say, disarticulated skeletal remains from 3 to 4 men, 10 to 12 women, and at least 2 children in the tomb. So interesting stuff. They say it wasn't uncommon at this time for tombs of elite individuals to contain small pyramids. They say the tomb was excavated in the summer and winter field seasons of 2013, and they're going to be presenting the results of their findings at a place in it's not actually in Egypt. They're going to do it in Portland, Oregon. And they say it's going to be at the annual meeting of the American Research Center in Egypt to be held in Portland, Oregon, April 4th through the 6th. So that's just coming right up.
Yeah.
So very interesting. And this is from another one of our Starseed reporters. It's an article from Mind Body Green, 5 Things You Need to Know About Your Blood Type. They say that research indicates that your blood type is a key genetic factor that influences many areas of our health and well-being. For instance, they say that your blood type may predict your susceptibility to certain diseases. They say that people of different blood types react differently to stress. They say that your blood type antigens are not just in your blood. They're everywhere in your body. They say particularly in surfaces that interact with the environment. Your digestive tract, your mouth to your large intestines, all of that have blood type antigens. And they say that this influences how the body reacts to the food you eat. So your blood type can determine allergies, digestive issues, things like that. And they say that gut bacteria is also related to blood type. Plus, they say that a one-size-fits-all approach to nutrition does not work. They say that everyone does not have the same basic nutritional needs. They say that people of certain blood types thrive better on different kinds of diets. They say that your blood type is an important part of taking good care of yourself, knowing that and responding to your particular type of blood accordingly. And now I want to read something that came from alunajoy.com. This was forwarded to Lavendar, forwarded on to me. And this is a channeled material by Aluna Joy, and it's from the Star Elders. And before I begin to read this, which is going to take a little bit of time here, I just want to talk for a moment about, and then we can talk after this, Ariel, we can have a discussion, but so many people are experiencing so many different things right now. Now I'm talking about awakened people, people that are spiritual. I resonated with what the Star Elders had to say through Aluna Joy, because in my working with Starseed and many other spiritual people, I find that while some people are greatly energized at this time and seem to have a lot of energy and are doing and prospering very well in their lives, others are struggling with things like depression, fatigue, confusion, disorientation, not really wanting to be plugged into things, having a hard time keeping a balance, being forgetful, being sort of foggy-minded. It follows both ends of the spectrum, the way people are responding to this energetic shifting that's going on the planet. And it's really wild. I mean, there is just so much going on. There are so many energies on the planet that are penetrating all of us at every second. Mass energies and mass consciousness, and so much is changing swiftly. Our society has become so much more complex. Things are becoming more difficult. Things are moving faster. These are really challenging times. So having said all that, I want to read to you what the Star Elders said through Aluna Joy. And this was posted on March 29th of this year, just a couple days ago. So I'm going to begin now. And they say, the Star Elders, it is here. You have been swimming in a universal crock pot since December 22, 2012. You have tried to avoid it or merge, surrender to the crushing heat of undefined, unknowable transformation with little success no matter which direction you go. It has really been confusing as your internal compass has not been pointing to your true north. You have been having a hard time holding your center and losing sight of yourself. Abundance has been challenging. Maintaining your health has been confusing. Relationships have been reevaluated and have shifted many times. Many collective course corrections have left many people in the middle of creating something, and then the energy drops out, and you're left holding the unfinished project, feeling stunned. The landing sequence has now begun into a new Earth portal. This is the slow burning phase for landing. It is fueled by accelerating pressure caused by the increasing gravitational pull of the new world that you have created. You have finally begun your landing sequence to touch down into this new world. This was triggered by the leap you made on December 22, 2012. There is too much gravitational pressure now for your body memory to fight off what is coming. Your body's old memory is about to give up and finally merge with the new frequencies to upgrade the entire vehicle that you are in. The old magnetic field that held your reality in place is fading and letting you go and is being replaced with a new field of attraction. Most of you are going to love this. This gravitational pull can cause a myriad of controversies, and some people will try to be Obi-Wan so they can disable the Death Star's tractor beam. But this urge to stop the process is their body's fear and the old world illusion memory talking to them. You are feeling the magnetic pull of your new world. Your memory is finally letting go. What was once a mental, emotional, spiritual journey is now becoming an ever so intense physical transformation. Your spiritual path is now becoming something you will physically live 24/7. Some people will choose to drop their bodies and meet us on the other side. But for those who stay the course, they will experience a total reboot upgrade from a human earth-based body into an integrated cosmic body. Because you chose to do this, new and more intense body symptoms will be clues that you are getting closer to touchdown. Humanity is in a red-hot, slow-roasting re-entry burn and is about to enter phase one in the eclipse window, which is a new earth portal that will take place in April of 2014. This is the first stage of a very intricate and complicated re-entry and splashdown sequence. We know that you are ready to leap right now, but this needs to go slow and steady, so course corrections can be made that will enable you to land in just the right frequency. Your beautiful Earth is feeling this physical transformation as well. A fairly quiet part of the Ring of Fire is now activated. Several March 28th 5.0 earthquakes in California and a Class 6 solar flare on March 29th are examples of clues to this transformation. Lightworkers have held off major earthquakes on your West Coast for several years, but the gravitational pull of the new world is becoming too strong for anyone to control. Odd extreme weather is a part of your Earth preparing to land in new frequencies. Many people will be able to hear with their physical ears the rising frequencies, sound currents of the Earth. And in parenthesis, Earth is a low tone, the Sun is a high-pitched tone. And I will interject here, by the way, everybody, that I get so many reports of people with hums in their ears of various pitches. I'm sure this is resonating with many of you who hear these tones in your ears. But back to the channeling. When you focus on the sound currents, it will help you stay in sync with the Earth, the Sun, and the landing process that encompasses humanity and Earth. What this means to you for now, during the next few months and up until your Earth splashes down, you will have to face living fully in present moment reality. You will find it impossible to hold on to the illusions of the past and manifest in linear time format. You will fine-tune everything with a dizzying amount of little course corrections that will make your head spin. As energy advances and the new Earth gravitation grows stronger, sensitive ones might be affected more. These sensitive ones might feel slammed, especially before and after earthquakes and or natural disasters, and a few hours after an X-class solar flare and or anything that affects a large amount of the Earth's population at once. Support your visionaries and sensitive ones when needed. Their job is to give you a peek into what is coming next and to help you prepare for it, and they pay a huge price for this job. There is usually one sensitive in every family. Most of humanity will not be able to hide who they are and what they are feeling, whether it's positive or negative. Even though most people have mastered holding positive intent, you will find it is easier to be exactly where you are, and not judge yourself, even if you are feeling negative. There will be less resistance in going with the flow, especially once you understand that negative feelings will pass. Remember, what you resist will persist. What you resist will become an inner monster that will drain you, and this will change moment to moment. Just as a little child who falls and cries, a moment later they are laughing and playing all over again. Humanity will process these oscillating frequencies in waves. This way, there is always support for you somewhere, as some people may be feeling quite low, while others will be sailing high. You cannot judge anyone's chosen path at this point, and we know that you want to be supported in yours as well. Everyone will experience this oscillating landing in different ways and at different speeds. Remember, your spiritual toolbox that you've been collecting will support your landing. You will need these tools, and you will also acquire new tools for the advanced energies that are coming. Acceptance will be the word of choice these next months. The doorway back to the old ways will be closed to you. Earth and your bodies will transform. This is all a part of the landing sequences. It is intense. Your memory will not like it. Your spirit will love it. Humanity's new Earth splashdown is coming, and all will crack out of the cocoon that you have been in. And you will soon breathe the sweet atmosphere of a pure and clean world. And again, that is Channeling from the Star Elders by Aluna Joy at alunajoy.com.
Wow. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that.
Yes, as, I'm sure they can.
As I was applying it to, you know, my current, you know, reality, and yeah, it feels so right.
And I know you talk to a lot of starseed, Ariel, a lot of starseed, and I'm sure you've been seeing some of these patterns in the people that come to you.
It is.
That people really, you know, are just, yeah, go ahead.
What you just as it said, you know, waking up, but it's more about already being awake and then what's next. And certainly since 2012, a lot of people report to me that things are moving faster, they are accelerating, you know, they're pulling out ahead of their established circle of family and friends, and that can be a challenge.
It's a whirlwind.
Mm-hmm. It is. But knowing the beauty that we're heading for and that is starting to unfold, there are so many people that are so ready for it, and they're already in position and helping to hold the door for others who
exactly.
are still
you just,
catching
yeah.
the bus.
Right, exactly. I know that we have many starseed out there who are standing steady. And you put it well. They're holding the door for others to get on the bus. So that's right. But for those of you that listen to this that are struggling with sort of that oscillation, which can also be interpreted as sort of like a sense of imbalance or maybe emotions that come in waves, this is just a part of it. To stand steady is not always easy, but and sometimes we have to allow for our emotions and not judge them. Self-love is really important. And don't you think, Ariel, being in touch with nature, getting outside when we can, it's very grounding to be sure
oh,
to be
yeah.
grounded in the planet. Hmm?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Animals are good, too. Any contact we can have with animals, our pets, nature, birds, trees. Trees are wonderful. I talk to trees all the time. They're very intelligent, wise beings. So staying in touch with the earth, eating right, good diets, pure water, free of fluoride and all that other junk.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, and I was thinking about that. There is a book that I read a long, long, long time ago. I think it's called Eating Right for Your Type, which
yeah,
kind of went along with
like
what you
that.
Said earlier in the news about different blood types have different requirements for diet, and there's not one diet that's the best for every person.
Right.
Yeah. So doing a little bit of research, finding out what your blood type is, and you might be able to bring in the nutritive, is that the word I want to use?
Right. Right, it is.
Substances that will best support your body physically because we're all going through changes. And I know I hear people talking about everything from headaches to heart palpitations to digestive disorders to just weird kind of physical sensations you know, emotional roller coaster. So just take it, whether it's pleasant or not pleasant, take it as a sign that you're moving in the right direction and you're on the wave that's moving to the age of Aquarius in full bloom.
Right, exactly. Don't panic, you know. And I want to tell you something. I think that we're seeing such a polarization in belief systems. Of course, we're on the one end. We're working towards some enlightenment, and I don't know quite how to say this in a way that's appropriate, so maybe I shouldn't. But I had to get something done at I was standing in line the other day, and there were about 40 people in line with me, so it prompted some conversation. Then a young woman behind me tapped me on the shoulder. I'd never seen her before. She just spoke to me, and she looked at me wide-eyed, and she said, "This line is so long. Do you think it's going to be like that on Judgment Day?" And yes, literally, absolutely, truly, the trusting eyes of a 19, 20-year-old young woman looking at me, a mother, married, strong, you know, fundamentalist kind of background, truly wondering if, you know, this whole scenario of 5 billion people plus all that have been on the planet before, okay, who knows how many trillions of people that would be, standing in line one by one before a throne to be judged. And she asked me, and I considered it a great opportunity that Spirit gave me because I just knew it was an opportunity to plant a seed. She said to me, "Well, how, you know, do you believe that?" Whereupon I gave her sort of an answer that I thought that she needed without stating one way or the other, but I discussed nature and the largeness of divinity and that maybe sometimes we little humans make God in our own image and that maybe we should consider that we don't know it all, whatever it was that I said. But the point of all of this is that as we got to the end of our conversation, the line had moved along. And I just, you know, I felt from her. I felt her spirit, her essence. I knew it was an important conversation because we did have some pretty good exchange. And as I got ready to leave her, I turned and I said, "The main thing about life is, sweetheart," I said, "just don't worry, be happy." And she gasped. She gasped. She said, "Oh, I named my child out of whatever the name was from some, I don't know, some song, whatever that was, about that don't worry, be happy chant." She had named one of her children after that. But the phrase, "don't worry, be happy," was very important to her. And I said that for one thing, I was inspired to say it. But I do think that too overwhelmed with everything. And one of the things we do have to remember, as these beings said in this channeling, be in the present moment, for goodness sakes. Stay grounded and don't fret. Remember to enjoy and savor the moment. Radiate love. Find joy. And don't stress. Don't stress so much. Sometimes we take ourselves too seriously. When we get these really weird physical symptoms and it seems like, "My gosh, what's the matter with me? You know, this is going wrong. That's going wrong. What the heck's all this stuff?" Just remember to breathe, relax, trust, find happiness. Really, joy is a deeper level of thing. But just don't be so fretful. I think that every day we can do things to help others. We can express love. And one by one, whatever stage somebody's at, another person is at. This young woman couldn't have possibly understood metaphysics. She was way too brainwashed and has a long way to go. But everybody's at a different level in their development, but everyone is precious and everyone is embodied light. And we do the most to help other people remember that by looking them in the eyes. You know that movie Avatar, Ariel, where my mind just went blank. The Na'vi woman, their greeting is, "I see you, I see you."
Mm-hmm.
And that is so beautiful because really that is very important. It's honoring the divinity in somebody. So let us remember when we look people in the eye, whether they believe what we do or not, we need to think, I see you. That radiance that we emanate, that light that we emanate is going to make a difference. It's kind of like flipping a switch on a large transformer system where one switch trips another, trips another, trips another. So even though all of this is intense, I just want to remind everybody to just love yourself and be happy and be in the moment and don't fret so much because it's all going to be fine.
Most of the things we worry about never happen anyway.
Exactly.
All of to manifest what you desire by keeping your focus on that which brings you joy.
Absolutely. And all of these changes, here's the deal. These frequencies, this agitation, this sort of angst and intense stress that people are feeling, this comes from fears being released. We all have fear locked in ourselves. We got it locked in our DNA. We are so saturated with fear. A lot of us think we've worked really hard to overcome our fears. But as things intensify, you're gonna find stuff coming up. And it manifests as stress or weird body symptoms or whatever. The symptoms can also just be from frequencies. But I'm finding that people, this general widespread unease is a lot of that fear coming out. So you just have to acknowledge it. Don't run from it. And the minute a person goes back to their center, the light under their breastbone, that part of them that is connected to Source, and you take a moment to appreciate goodness and all the beauty and focus on what it is that you desire, it brings you right back to your point of power, because with all these frequencies coming in, we do have to connect to our power. It's forcing us to. This channeling indicated we're going to have to be living this 24/7. This isn't part-time spirituality. It isn't
right
anymore. Yeah, we can't do that and get by with it. It won't work.
I love that channeling, and thank you so much for bringing it to us through the sources.
Yes, Aluna Joy.
On the air here. So I think we
are... AlunaJoy.com, Ariel.
Okay. Luna Joy, Aluna, A-L-U-N-A?
Yes, it's A-L-U-N-A.
Joy.com.
Right.
That is some good stuff, and I'm sure she's got other interesting things, so take a look at that.
Oh, yeah, she has a nice website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to sign off and listen to tonight's show. We're going to have a good program, some of Lavendar's teachings, which we all can stand to hear again.
Well, that's
for
right.
Sure.
And the way that these came to her through the transmissions from the ship, and I couldn't help but think when I was listening to it, this happened in 1980. I was like, wow.
Well,
what was
you
I
know
doing
she
in 80? Nothing close to what this was. So I mean, she has really been. I mean, decades ahead.
She has been a seer. Yes, a seer
right
for a long time.
And now is time for this material, and it holds a lot of things that might stimulate some memories for a lot of people.
Right, right.
And kind of reestablish your resolve, especially when it comes to the misuse of power on this planet.
Absolutely. And you know, we have a lot of new listeners that are tuning in that never heard this before, so it's really good to replay these periodically. The rest of us get to be reminded. Don't you find that when you're learning something, you really need to hear it many times before you really can process it?
Oh, sure. I mean,
especially as deep and as layered as this is.
Yeah, there's always something that you didn't catch before, so.
Absolutely.
With
so
that,
I'm looking forward to it.
We now begin
Alrighty.
The Atlantis material from Lavendar.
This is Lavendar bringing you Atlantis material from the vault. This is June 20th, 1983, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Subject, Atlantis material. The Atlantis material was given to me in November and December of 1980 while I was on the island of Aruba. This was conveyed by telethought communication sent by extraterrestrials residing on a spacecraft within the atmosphere of our planet of Earth, yet manifesting in another dimension. This information was transferred in pictures, words, concepts, and projections, and was received, taped, typed, and put away for safekeeping until the information could be used as educational tools for the upliftment of the consciousness of the people on the planet. After receiving this material, I couldn't help but wonder if I was indeed a part of a galactic project which would have long-term effects, or did I have an overworked imagination which was stimulated by some genetic chromosome within my brain. Was this for real, me conversing with beings on a spacecraft, or had I created this whole thing on some level of mind? From the middle of November to the middle of December, I was awakened every morning at 5 a.m. and was activated into reciting out loud the happenings of a civilization which was destroyed over 12,000 years ago by the mad scientist of that time. Each morning I would view the story of Atlantis through the eyes of the one that I would learn to call the scribe. He would be sitting in his study on the ship, floating in the water where he was writing the events that had taken place since his arrival on the planet. He also would record the history of all creation and the laws that would govern these manifestations of creation. First, I would look over his shoulder to see what he was writing for the day, and then I would talk out loud into a tape recorder describing what I was perceiving of the time that was that part of history of Atlantis, the lost continent. Thurman Myers, my traveling companion and my best friend, helped me by transcribing the tapes at the end of each day's session. The sessions lasted until around 10 a.m. I would then shower and drink some grape juice, for my blood sugar would be extremely low after each session. By noon, I'd go to the kitchen and cook up a storm, fixing a fancy lunch. We would then go to the beach to relax on the sand while trying to hold on to whatever sanity we had left. I wondered if I was the only person in the world who was being shown this information and material about Atlantis, and was this for real? Had I also been there? Could I have made this up? These things I questioned every day. When the last day of information was relayed to me, I was coming very close to an emotional flip-out. I had seen and experienced so much in such a short period of time that I could hardly hold on to the trees, as the wind almost blew me off the world. I tried to rationalize some logical manner of how this material should be handled. A move would be great, then people could see what actually had happened to the lost continent of Atlantis. They could profit from the mistakes of ancient misuse of power. Then I thought about putting material into book form. Would I make it fiction or nonfiction? Well, truth is truth. But how was I ever going to bring this information to the attention of people who could hardly comprehend things beyond their limited points of view in politics and religion or the now moment? I pondered over this material for several months, then finally decided to put it to rest until I was given clear instructions on what to do with it. I had no idea that others, whom I had not yet met, would also be connected with this material in the years that followed. Thurman and I decided to make copies of this information, and after doing so, place them in a safe place. I'm going to relate now some of the things which happened that correlate with the Atlantis material. In the story, the scribe had a male servant by the name of Clapus. He was a very loyal subject and owed his life to the scribe. On December 7, 1980, I saw a segment pertaining to Clapus. He would bring to the scribe a crystal staff about 3 feet long, placing on it a red cloth. The scribe would use this for balancing procedures and would use it often to counteract the energies coming from the city created by the mad scientist. At the end of that day's session, I was shown that Clapus was now incarnated into the body of one we know as Jerry Levine, a friend of ours from Reserve, New Mexico. I wondered how Jerry would react when I told him of his other life as Clapus, a male servant. On December 22, 1980, we arrived in Reserve, New Mexico, with another friend of ours, Gina Bilodeau. I informed Jerry of a tape that I wanted him to hear. I tried to prepare him and told him to secure himself by having a beer. He told me that first he wanted to show me something which he had hand-painted on a scroll. Then he pulled out this long piece of paper, and it was drawn a red cloth with a crystal staff. And the scroll, it was dated December 7th, 1980, the same date as the information that I received about Clapus. I was speechless. Here was my first confirmation that the Atlantis material was real, something beyond a coincidence. I was the one who needed the beer. I played the tape for him of the session about Clapus. He seemed pleased, but restless with the information. He didn't know quite how to take all of this, and it took him several months to really absorb what had happened to him. Neither of us talked about it again until later the next year. It just seemed, well, just too much of a coincidence. At that point in time, I didn't really want to consider anything else. Now to go to another date, still the same story. One of the reasons that Atlantis was destroyed was because of the misuse of power in many areas. But the misuse of vibrational music contributed heavily to the final decision to wipe Atlantis off the face of the earth, and wiped it was. For thousands of years, it has remained buried under the Atlantic Ocean, with very little physical evidence surfacing to acknowledge the possibility that such a continent even existed. How could such an advanced race of people destroy themselves? What was the contributing factor behind the scrubbing of an entire species? What cosmic laws were broken? And who were the souls that lived then? Are they back now? These are some of the questions that we would like those reading this to ask themselves. If you have lived at that period of time, then what was your contribution to this action? That should raise the hair on the back of your necks, for almost all of you have been connected to Atlantis in one form or another, if not directly, then indirectly through others that you have known and loved on this planet. No one ever really escapes the memories of Atlantis. In the last days of Atlantis, a group of scientists got together and decided that the people should be controlled by vibrational music. A device was engineered to wear on the head. It consisted of quartz crystal, ruby, gold, silver, and copper. Everyone was to wear this device, and if they didn't, then punishment would ensue. It was the theory of the High Council of Elders that Atlantis would become a more productive country if energies could be controlled through orchestrating the people, and certain music was designed to enhance the daily workers that kept all parts of the country in operation. The people liked the music and looked forward to the new and visualization vibrational patterns. They didn't mind this kind of control, not really. They felt better and became model citizens, and growth and advancement was visible. So the practice of wearing the headsets became as normal as one wearing clothes. The masses just never thought that that headset that they were wearing every day would contribute to the downfall of one of the most advanced civilizations that your planet has ever known. Had they even suspected that it would be turned on them, maybe, just maybe, the story of Atlantis would have been different. When Poseidon became king, who in your present knowing as John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the land of Atlantis was an outpost to some neighboring planets, and many species came to visit Atlantis and its people. It was an experiment of sorts, yes. Just think of it as a huge experiment that got carried away with itself. Poseidon was Pleiadian in blood coding and ruled for a very long time. He was a gracious and kind king, but ruled his people in such a way that they would have laid down their lives for him had he asked it. Later, when he was Abraham Lincoln, he asked it in the war between the North and the South. And later, when he was John Kennedy, he asked it for Vietnam. He had many children and was dearly loved by all except one, his oldest, Orpheus Marcus, who now is incarnated as Ronald Reagan, President of the United States of America. When Poseidon died, Orpheus Marcus took the throne, and it was not his father's wish that he do so. But when Poseidon was poisoned with an extraterrestrial substance, then he had no say about the matter. This poisonous substance had far-reaching effects even after the death of the physical body. The soul experienced explosions of energy similar to magnetic storms of the sun. There is no other way to describe this. Now, more detail about the building and the music in Atlantis. The buildings had music coming from the walls. As a person walked on quartz cobbled streets, the music in the headset would be stimulated by the energies of the quartz in the streets. There was a substance similar to mortar between the quartz stones that would keep the people from getting tired and also help further the coding of the music. People's dispositions and attitudes were all controlled by vibrational conditioning through music, color, and subliminal brain control. As long as the people were peaceful and happy, everything seemed to be going just fine. When Orpheus Marcus took over, he commissioned some scientists to further their experimentation, and through his lack of discernment and love of power, he helped to destroy all of the good works of his father. Scientists discovered chemicals that would speed up a person's energy pattern, and other chemicals that would slow them down. And today, scientists have come close to duplicating these drugs, but not exactly. Orpheus Marcus decided to change a few laws to suit himself, and declared that the law of Warren should be abolished, along with women having any rights whatsoever. He also destroyed the marital system and allowed a man to have more than one wife. He started to destroy within himself, first, all his spiritual knowledge and reasoning, and later extended those beliefs to his people. With control of their minds, bodies, and soul, he was able to program an entire race of people the way he wanted them to be. Later, after several years, he started changing the DNA and the RNA code of the people and helped to create monsters that were half human and half animal, the things, as they were called. Mutations started to happen with much regularity. Celestial messengers came to warn him of his evil doings. They told him that if he did not reverse his era, that forces would be let loose that would destroy the entire country. This he did not believe, as he was totally consumed with his power and was, by this time, a drug addict and could not be reasoned with at all. Another use for the headsets was of an educational value. People would go to various learning centers for their education. They would enter by using a punch card that would keep records of how many times they visited the learning center. When one would return, he would have to show the card because one could not go there too often. This would cause a mental breakdown if misused. One would simply lay back in a special chair that would align the body to different electromagnetic fields. The headset would be placed with a quartz crystal over the third eye. A disc would be placed in the headset, and music, color, and sounds would enhance the vibrational conditioning of the learning process. This kind of learning was fed at harmonic rates that caused very high levels of awareness to take place. What would take 1 year to learn in reading could be obtained in minutes at this very accelerated rate of comprehension. This is how the education of the people was conducted. After the session was over, the headset would be worn with certain music reaffirming everything that was beamed from the headset earlier. It was through this educational manner that discs were tampered with and the distortions were set in motion. People had given up their free will in order for a saner society to develop. Once the will was gone, they were nothing more than robots waiting for instruction or destruction. There were a few that had their wills, and it was through them that a rebellion started. Some left and even went to other countries. Atlantis was an experiment that failed. The perfect society was, in the end, a disgusting, demonic, grotesque misuse of power. All that had participated in this atrocity would have other lessons to learn. Eventually, when the cosmic calendar returned, they'd be placed together with the same leaders, the same scientists, but with a different script. This is happening now, as we speak to you this day of your counting. In March of 1981, Thurman and I ventured to Egypt on a tour called Atlantis Rising. We thought it was only appropriate that we should be on this trip so properly named. However, I hardly think I will go again with 250 metaphysicians. It was insanity from the beginning. Thurman and I seemed to have a protective shield around us, which made us invisible most of the time. It wasn't until President Reagan was shot on March 29th that we seemed to become visible. That morning in Aswan, people would come up to me and ask, where had we been? I told them that we'd been sitting at their tables, on their buses, on their tours. They were stunned because they had never seen us until that day, so they said. I didn't know how to explain it, but now it seems obvious we were being protected from so many various frequencies from among the people. In the Atlantis material, I was shown that the king, who had changed the laws and threw out the law of one, was the one and same soul essence of Ronald Reagan. He had allowed the mad scientists to corrupt the land and children, and had sanctioned cruel experiments on half-animal and half-human beings. He was in power when the great crystal was misused, causing it to explode, bringing about crazy weather and earthquakes, which soon made the entire continent disappear. I remembered vividly how Ronald Reagan had won by landslide on November 4, 1980, over President Jimmy Carter. How stunned people were by the outcome. Some were shocked that a B-grade actor could bring himself to be President of the United States. I recall thinking, as I watched the election return in Las Vegas, Nevada, how millions of people were giving this man their votes, and they probably didn't even know why. I can still feel the chills that went through me when he made his acceptance speech. I will never forget the looks on the faces of Jimmy and Rosalynn Carter as though they had just seen Armageddon. I left Las Vegas the next day on November 9th and adjourned to Aruba. I wasn't aware of any presidential activities leading up to the inauguration. We had a television, but everything was in Spanish. I didn't think of Ronald Reagan until near the end of the Atlantis material when I was shown that he was the presiding king when Atlantis sank. Then I was in shock. What was this man doing as the leader of our country? Had he changed since Atlantis? Was he still the same power-hungry man who had caused millions to vanish overnight in the most catastrophic happening in the history of the planet? What were his motives now? And whose side was he on? And why tell me? I'm just a little farm girl from southwest Oklahoma. In the Atlantis material I was shown, in the king's speech to the people, he proclaimed himself to be ruler of all men. I saw his coronation in every detail. His crowning was the celebration of all celebrations. It was performed in a large amphitheater in the round. Circus acts, entertainers like Siegfried and Roy, Anne Margaret and others, who are in the spotlight of today, were among the same performers of that day as well. There has never been anything, even in Las Vegas, to compare to the gala happening of the coronation of the new king. I saw a woman in her late 20s standing outside the festivities with tears in her eyes. I watched her go to her house where her three children awaited their dinner. These were the new king's children, but he was not allowed to claim them because they were not of royal bloodline. In his hour of glory, the woman and children who loved him would be left behind and cast aside because of the rules of the land. I heard her praying before her children at the dinner table. O infinite is, bless him this day of his crowning. Please, dear God, some way, someday, please bring him back to me. This humble woman today is Nancy Reagan, and the children, the same children as are his today. The new king had one very good friend who was a singer and an actor in the theater. As a special surprise for his coronation, the scientist had developed and placed in his friend a mechanical voice box which made his voice so beautiful and with vocal range so precise that the sounds could activate the sexual glands of all the women who would hear his voice. That friend was the soul essence of the one that we now call Frank Sinatra. Women swooned, falling at his feet in those days, even as in those days, like today. As you remember back in the 40s, a skinny kid from New Jersey had women falling all over themselves. There was no logic. They all acted as though they were experiencing the effects of some aphrodisiac. Was this soul memory? Had some of them lived in Atlantis? Could all of this be happening again? On December 11th, as I arrived at the Miami airport, I picked up a newspaper. I hadn't seen one for a month. The first thing that met my eyes was the picture of Ronald Reagan with his arm around Frank Sinatra, and the caption read, "Sinatra, inaugural chairman." I almost fainted. Thurman propped me up because he knew what I was experiencing, a realization only he could share at that time. We both looked at each other and was unable to really say a word. Slowly I walked to my next plane with my heart in my throat. As Thurman was catching a different plane, we parted with the realization that it was not an accident that Sinatra was to be the inaugural chairman. In charge of all the festivities for the president, was history repeating itself? Were these two back again in their famous duo? So many questions were bombarding my mind as I boarded my plane for Denver. Answers? Are you kidding? How was I ever going to convince anyone of the things I knew and what I was thinking? The whole prospect made me nervous, and as a consequence, I ordered a double martini and promptly fell into a deep sleep from the remainder of the flight. To this day, Thurman has never revealed to me how he felt, but I think I had felt enough for both of us. I didn't see the inauguration, but I heard that it was one of the most classy acts to hit Washington in a long time. I tried not to think too much of Ronald Reagan and Frank Sinatra in regard to the Atlantis material. They were a part of it, but were not the main characters of the story. In fact, they were just bit players in the whole scenario. Well, back to Cairo. We were getting off the train in Cairo from Aswan when we received the news of the assassination attempt upon the president. I began flashing like a neon sign. It's useless trying to put on paper all the thoughts and feelings upon hearing the news. Here we were in the Middle East, and where was my passport? Were the natives going to remain friendly? My strongest thought was that I must get to the hotel and into a tub of water, which I did as soon as possible. While in the tub, I heard again from the guides who had brought the Atlantis material to me. They told me to go and find Mahmud, the keeper of the pyramids, and ask if we could secure it alone so that we could pray for our president. Also, I was told to locate 10 others and take them inside the Great Pyramid of Giza and allow each one to hold a crystal. Once inside, I was to await further instructions. As I walked from the bathroom, I seemed to be floating on another type of energy, something that wasn't my own. my brain sped up and my vision was so accurate that I was seeing through the walls. Upon seeing and hearing me, Thurman knew what had to be done, and he called 10 people on the phone with instructions to meet us at the entrance to the pyramid. Upon our arrival, Mahmood closed the tour to all other tickets. Of course, many on tour who had purchased tickets were very upset, and a busload of French and German people both cussed us and made nasty gestures. I could see and feel the hate coming from their eyes and felt their lack of understanding of what we were about to do. An Egyptian girl appeared saying that she had been asked to come to the pyramid to pray for our president. I had never seen her before, but I felt she had been sent for a reason. Two more from our group made their appearance, and once inside, we found 3 more already awaiting us, which made a total of 18, and that's exactly how many crystals I had to bring to those presents to hold. These particular crystals have been given to me in a mysterious manner, which I shall not reveal at this time. I was the mediator of the group and led them in chants and mantras. We sent our energies out with the help of the energies of the pyramid through the crystals to President Reagan to bring healing and strength to his physical, mental, spiritual, and psychic body. We had also been told that his press secretary, Jim Brady, had died. So we conducted a ritual for his soul to go through Bardo peacefully. Upon our return to the United States, we learned that at that exact moment we were conducting the service for Jim Brady. He had experienced a miraculous recovery which mystified the medical doctors. It was agreed medically that he had been declared dead but had been brought back to life. Actually, they were correct, for the conscious energies which were at work operated under the assumption that he had crossed over into the Bardo state. When you help someone through Bardo, you help take their spirit to the next stage of evolution through peace and harmony. After that energy had been directed to the United States, several people laid down in the sarcophagus and accepted a healing. That day in the pyramid was of special significance to all of us. Although I had asked that all the crystals be returned to me after the service, 2 of those present did not return them, and I don't know what has happened to the crystals or to the people. Did we interfere in the matters of God? Were we playing God? What were the powers of that great pyramid, and what powers of energy were in those crystals? Who were these beings conducting the healing exercise? And if it's true that Ronald Reagan was the king of Atlantis when it went down, then why was it important that we helped to save him? Was he now the good king, making restitution for past mistakes? Did his soul need to balance the karmic debt to millions of people from Atlantis? Were we helping to establish a new galactic walk-in energy, which would help the president to bring about the balance needed? These things I've asked myself 100 times since that day. All of this wasn't exactly a confirmation of the Atlantis material. It wasn't provable, as with Jerry Levine, but still it hit home as a contributing factor helping to bring forth this truth about the Atlantis material, because you know when the truth hits you, you just seem to know it. 1 week before the healing session in the pyramid for the president, I had experienced another segment of the Atlantis material while I was lying in the sarcophagus where I was shown the final chapter from the scribe. The dark forces, Belials, had infiltrated the light forces and had found a way to help eliminate some of the 12 who had been brought to the planet. As I was awaiting the scene to begin, I became aware of the presence of a very strong cobalt blue light which seemed to pervade the king's chamber. I knew then that was what was about to happen, was to see the most important segment, the final chapter of this incredible story. The beginning scene showed Kleypas, the scribe's servant, walking next to the crystal cylinder which contained the body of the scribe. This surprised me and brought tears to my eyes. Kleypas was holding a copy of the records which the scribe had written and already placed in 4 other places around the world. I didn't consciously know that there were other copies of his writings, although it would stand to reason that there should be a backup system for future discovery. Kleypas carried the records in a box, so I couldn't really see how the information was conveyed. Later, my impression was that it was coated in quartz crystal, such as maybe a crystal skull. The Atlanteans were very advanced in all technology and would know how to secure delicate information in a protective way to prevent misuse of the information. Once those who had the proper attunement and blood coding of remembrance would be able to tap these records at the proper time. Safeguards were placed over every set of records, for the balance of the planet was at stake. Never again would this valuable information be used by the dark forces. This is the reason for protective energies 24 hours a day of Earth time, which is placed over this information and all the places where they are. Kleypas left Atlantis with a copy of the records. I watched him as he finally took them to someone in France. I wasn't shown who at that time, but I was shown that it eventually came into the hands of Nostradamus, the famous seer of France in the 16th century. Later was revealed to me that Merlin also had it in his possession, and he showed it to King Arthur, who in turn entrusted it to Sir Lancelot to be taken to the next destination. Nostradamus had previously been one of the original 12, and so was Merlin. It was planned that the record only be in the hands of one of the 12, or the energies of the bloodline of the 12. This was done for safety of information. Nostradamus used these records as a guideline for his quatrains, for which he later became famous. In these records were the ancestral bloodlines of how the programming would take place concerning the transmutation process of eliminating the laggard blood off the planet. This process would take thousands of years, for it all had to come about through the cosmic laws and would only work through a computerized time capsule to be released by cosmic planetary energies, which had been set in motion and were irreversible. Nostradamus passed it on to others who would have the proper blood coding, and now it is somewhere in France, guarded day and night by a swarm of white doves. Although I was given the place, I will not disclose it in this writing. You know, later it was revealed to me that I had a relative whose name was Ed Criswell of Criswell Predicts, and he always said he was the incarnation of Nostradamus. You know, it was Chris who helped throw me into the world to do psychic work and investigation, which brought me to this information about the records of Atlantis. Chris died on October 3, 1982, the same day that Mukunanda died. I visualized them leaving the planet hand in hand to further help to organize the next assignment dealing with the balance of the planet. In Chris's last year, he became an alcoholic, but after learning what information he carried in his blood and soul, it is quite understandable. For a time, I was judgmental with regard to his behavior, but you know what? Not anymore. The information contained in those records is so mind-expanding that it is very hard to maintain Earth sanity and still keep an Earth balance. As I write this, I can feel Chris's presence and can still see his clear blue eyes as though they were on this written page. Suddenly, a fire alarm has sounded in the building across the street. I am smiling and thinking of Chris making one of his dramatic entrances and exits like a showman. Several months after returning from Egypt, I made a trip to Reserve, New Mexico to see Jerry Levine, alias Kleypas, to tell him of the final chapter of The Scribe. While talking to him, I noticed the color in his face changing drastically. When I finished telling him the story, he pulled out a piece of paper which had arrived from France. This paper now has been misplaced or has disappeared. It seems that his blood relatives in France had traced him to New Mexico and had offered him a piece of property in France if he could pay back taxes on it. It was a name similar to the name of the place in which I had seen the records to be. I felt an explosion in my brain. I wanted to run out of the building screaming down the street. Although I didn't, I surely wanted to. Instead, I calmly changed the subject and finished telling Jerry other interesting incidents of our trip. If Jerry was hit by what had just happened, he didn't show it. Months later, when I would bring up the subject, nothing seemed to register. For some reason, it almost seemed he was not supposed to remember the connection. I took it as a sign of safety of information. Was this all a coincidence? Is there such a thing? Who was setting this plan into motion? Was Jerry to pay the taxes and claim his right to the records, or was I to pay them for him? Why had Jerry's mind received and understood everything up to a point and then went blank? Was some part of him protecting his sanity or perhaps even the records themselves? These were all things that I had to consider. Again, we didn't talk about this for another year. It was just all too much to think about, much less handle in an everyday existence. In fact, I chose to put the Atlantis material away and not talk of it or show it to even to my friends. In November of 1982, I was led to show the material to actress Shirley MacLaine. There was some reason she was to know about this material. I remembered her saying, "Why are you showing me this?" I told her that possibly something would take place later which would fit together with the Atlantis material. I didn't tell her that she was my backup system and now the information was also her responsibility. The timing was wrong, and her energies just hadn't shown up yet for that. She handled the information in a very cool manner, I suppose because of her professionalism as an actress. I wanted to shake her and just say, "Listen, Shirley, if I don't get this job done, then you'll have to do it." Instead, I pouted and poured myself another brandy. Atlantis didn't seem to be in any other person's recall bank but mine. At least not like I was experiencing. But the timing wasn't right, and as usual, I was getting very impatient. Once again, I put away the Atlantis material and turned my attention to other things. Then on May 3, 1983, Thurman and I went to North Carolina to see Andre Puarich and his wife Rebecca and their two children. Andrea is a man of about 67 years, and Rebecca is about 30. It was he who discovered and promoted Uri Geller, the Israeli, who has the great power of telekinesis, the power of bending metal. Andrea had spent a great deal of time, money, and energy showing the intellects of the world the extreme possibilities of universal laws and concepts. He had written a book about Uri and his encounters with a spacecraft called Spectra. This book is of such great magnitude that a witch hunt was begun to try and stop Andrea from further writing and informing the people. This book has now been banned from public libraries in the United States. Furthermore, no publisher is allowed to print any of his material for fear of having the Internal Revenue Service audit their books for the next 20 years. He became such a threat to scientists, politicians, and the CIA that he has had to flee for his life to Mexico, where he and his family have lived for 3.5 years. His exodus came when the CIA had his house burned along with his books. Not since the persecution of Nikola Tesla or William Reich has the government so vehemently gone after the soul of a man dedicated to so much truth. Now he has returned to the United States, and he's working on a cancer cure. I've admired his courage and desire to return to his country, which has only persecuted him for his efforts. Why does the government fear this one man to such extremes? What does he know that can hurt it? Why not work with him instead of against him? I wish I understood more about how our government thinks and works. One day, as we were sitting on the porch, enjoying the countryside and visiting with these fine people, I decided to tell Andrea and Rebecca the story of the scribe and the Atlantis material. Just at the exact moment I had finished telling the story, the phone rang. Rebecca excused herself and went to answer the phone. Their phone is unlisted, and only a handful of people have it, and since we had arrived, The phone had not been working, and each time we tried to call town, a recording would tell us that the number we had dialed was no longer in working order. I just shrugged and thought it was another way in which we were being protected. Rebecca returned to tell us that some man had just called from that place in France, you know, the place that Jerry Levine had just been told that he needed to pay taxes, and wanted to know if Andrea had found the Book of Knowledge yet. He further said that Rebecca's mother had given him the phone number, and he left Rebecca a number for Andrea to call. I had not been aware of Andrea searching for the Book of Knowledge because I hadn't yet read his book and didn't know that Spectra had once told he and Yuri that they would find this Book of Knowledge. After relaying the message to us, we must have all looked like fried lightning bugs because our hair stood straight up on end. Rebecca pulled us all into the living room and showed us a map of France dated 1700. On the map was the name of that town, but it was spelled differently. As I looked at the map, a part of my brain started clicking, and I began to get dizzy. Rebecca was talking, but I seemed to be in a fog and couldn't hear what she was saying. Later, she repeated it for me. Her in-laws from previous marriage have a house in France, and they give it to her 1 month out of each year. Well, that just about fixed me. The whole thing was too much, so I retreated to the kitchen to busy myself cooking chicken soup. Andrea had to go to bed. Thurman took a walk in the woods, and Rebecca started the laundry and doing her duties. We all knew what was happening, but none of us was yet willing to talk about it. Only Rebecca mentioned it off and on for the next few days. Every time she did, I wanted to put my hand over her mouth. I just didn't want to hear it. I wanted to be finished with the Atlantis material. Who was going to believe it anyway? And then there was Andrea. He had not so much as ever wished that the Book of Knowledge would be within his grasp, for Yuri had not seen fit to help him even look for the book. His interests were in other things. I had been so excited upon so many different occasions that I was afraid to be excited anymore. But here was Rebecca, newly activated to the material, and she was so excited about it. Further, we certainly didn't want someone telling us about more work to be done, and this time it could be dangerous beyond belief. If the government had done terrible things to Andrea because of his book and beliefs, then what in the hell were they going to do to him now? Furthermore, what were they going to do to me? I tried to tell my paranoia to sit down and shut up, but facts are facts, and I couldn't ignore them. For a moment, I flashed upon living on the farm in southwest Oklahoma, driving a tractor. Was this what my daydreams from youth had brought me? What would happen when the news leaked out that some little farm girl could have access to secrets and records of a continent that wasn't here anymore, with very little evidence that it ever existed? The whole scene was too much. With my temperament the way it is, I just said, "Screw it, I don't want to play anymore." However, things were happening in such a synchronized manner that I knew I was part of a gigantic plan, and my not wanting to play didn't seem to matter to the forces who were setting this plan into motion. If I didn't play, they had someone else to start where I stopped. Either I shaped up an attitude or I shipped out. It was very mathematical. Simple, subtract me, add someone else, or let me play. I decided to play mainly because I had come so far, whether sane or not, and I wanted to see just how much further this information of the records would take me. I realized this would be dangerous, but then what the hell? What was this Book of Knowledge? Would this information become public, or would this be the secret of my life? And that is the end of the reading of the material from the vault. Back to you, Ariel.
Well, Lavendar, we want to thank you so much for your years of commitment and dedication to this information. and for sharing it with us and our audience. And we are not going to be doing any questions this evening, since Lavendar had to get off the switchboard early. So we want to thank you all for joining us, and we will be back next week. So in between time, have a great week. Keep your focus forward, and thank you so much for joining us. From all of us here at Starseed Radio Academy, Anastasia, Vanya, Claudia, and Lavendar, thank you for joining us. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.